Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. The coin and stamp experts are back for another hour of calls from all of you collectors out there. Bob Scott and David Tripp are back. If you are enthusiastic about coins and or stamps, you want to get your call in early. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your question to voxpop@wamc.org. VoxPop@WAMC.org or 800-348-2551. We have you, David Tripp. We have you, Bob Scott. We have your stamps and your coins and you. And we'll be back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, they're back again to talk stamps and coins with you. David Tripp is the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle. He's a fine art consultant and cartoonist. Also with us is Bob Scott. He was a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, and head of the stamp departments at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. He is currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. It's always great to have these guys on the show. If you have a stamp or coin question, give us a shout. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's start with the person who's in the studio right now, and that would be Bob Scott. Bob, welcome.
Hello, Ray. Good to be here.
You like all this wide open space with David on the phone?
Do you know, it's absolutely fabulous, although it's kind of the first day of real spring and we're inside.
Well, again, there are no windows here at this part of the broadcast part of the building.
That's true. Lest people see us.
I liken it to a casino without the fun. You know, you have no windows and you don't know what time it is.
But we save a little coin.
Yes, we do. And let's welcome the fellow on the phone, David Tripp. How are you?
I'm well. I'd rather be there, but it is beautiful weather here as well. And I do have a window.
You do have a window.
Yes, I do. I'm looking out my window right now at a cherry tree, which is dropping its petals.
Oh, isn't that lovely and marvelous? Well, as always, you've done wonderful work with my show prep, and we'll just get right to it. Coin news. This is something. You sent pictures with this, which you know our listeners can't see. A world record for a fake coin.
Record for a fake coin that was cataloged as a fake.
That's bizarre.
Well, yeah, it is bizarre. I mean, we've all cataloged things that are not genuine, thinking they were genuine, and then they come back after the sale. I mean, Bob has that experience. Any big auction house has it with works of art as well. In this case, it appeared at auction about a month ago,
yeah.
With an opening bid, I might add, of $1. And it was a 1794 silver dollar,
yeah.
Which is the first year they made silver dollars in the United States. They are super rare, and a number of years ago, about 10 years ago, we sold one at Sotheby's for just shy of $5 million.
Wow.
And another example supposedly sold for around $10 million. So a $1 opening bid was really kind of cheap. Anyway, when you started doing a little looking into it, it turns out it was an exact duplicate of the one that is in the British Museum collection in London.
Well, how'd they do that?
Well, it's a fascinating thing. In the middle of the 19th century, the British Museum hired a guy called Robert Reddy to make reproductions. And he used what was then a new process called electrotyping, where they made molds and then they stuck them in a bath with some copper. And the copper, it was all magical chemical stuff. But what ended up happening is that they made these little shells that were identical to the image of the coin that they had taken the mold of.
Wow.
They then filled the inside of the two shells with some lead and then sealed it around the edge. And looking and everybody watching on Vox Pop can see this. But I've sent you two images today.
Yes, I'm looking at them now.
That is One of them is genuine. One of them is false. They're both the same coin.
Amazing.
And it's so deceptive, but Robert Reddy was a good guy, and he punched his initials, RR, on the edge. So the first thing you do is look on the edge. These were overweight because there's lead inside as opposed to silver. Mm-hmm. In any event, because it was the first one, and the $1,794 is super sexy, in the condition of the one that was in the upcoming sale, it would have been $1 million coin if it was genuine.
Right.
In the event, and Robert Reddy made thousands, and when I say thousands, I mean tens of thousands of these reproductions.
Why?
Ancient coins, modern coins. They sold them for 2 shillings and 6 pence, so a half crown, right, Bob?
Yeah.
To collectors to fill in little holes in their collections, to other museums for study purposes.
Hmm.
They made them of Renaissance medals. In fact, there was one in a very famous collection in New York, which they had published as being genuine themselves.
Wow.
Until somebody pointed out, did you look at the edge? And there's a little RR there. In any event, because it was the $1,794, virtually uncollectible to the likes of you and me,
okay,
without $1 million,
right,
it ended up in this actually, it was a Stax Bowers auction with an opening bid. And somebody I know said that he was really interested in it because he had a couple of other fake rare coins. But he dropped out at $16,000.
Uh-huh.
If you had a normal one, it would be maybe $200. In the event, it eventually sold for $45,000.
Wow, that's crazy talk. $45,000 bucks for a fake. Now, are there people who just collect this guy's work?
Yes, there are people who do, because he was so good. And in fact, the British Museum in the 1920s put out a catalog,
yep,
of all the available things that he had done. And then these were sent to collectors and to museums, and you could order off the price list.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Well, that's a great story. We're joined today by David Tripp and Bob Scott. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a stamp or coin question, April 23rd, it's Shakespeare's birthday. And, right?
Shakespeare's birthday and his death day.
Well, that's convenient.
Yeah.
You could celebrate both at once.
Came and went at the same time.
Amazing.
Nothing like rounding things up.
But he, according to the notes here presented to me by Mr. Tripp, he is the first non-royal to hit the UK trifecta. What's the UK trifecta, Bob?
First guy to be featured on a stamp, 1966. A banknote, 1970.
Right.
And finally, a coin. A £2 coin in 2016.
Wow. So that's very nice.
Yeah. It beat out Sir Isaac Newton by a whole year.
And these are valuable. Is the stamp a valuable one? It's from the 60s. They must have made a zillion of them.
1964. Sadly, I'm old enough that I can actually remember it being used on mail. And that should tell you something about its value.
Okay.
It's funny. It's the most collectible type of Shakespeare you can get, because for one of the world's most prolific and famous writers, how much do you think you'd pay for an autograph?
$0? I'm not a collector.
Oh, an
first
autograph,
of all,
no.
If you could find one,
you can. Yeah,
there are 6 known.
Okay,
and 3 of them are on the same document.
And he couldn't even remember how to spell his own name.
And he never spelled his name.
It's a conspiracy.
The same way.
He didn't exist. No.
If didn't. You can find a Shakespeare signature, you could probably you'd be looking at real estate in the $5 to $10 million market.
Oh, yeah. I think you're underselling it.
Yeah.
I think you're underselling it. In fact, I saw that one of the big auction houses next month is having a set of all 4 first folios of Shakespeare coming up, and they're selling them as a single lot. And just those, which do exist in some numbers, the estimate is something like £5 million.
Wowzers.
Yeah, that sounds about it. So there are no original, there is nothing of Shakespeare writing his own work. nothing survives.
Yeah, you see what I mean now?
So if you see some really, if you think lousy handwriting is lousy handwriting, and it seems even worse than that, I mean, then it might be Shakespeare.
The Bard of Avon couldn't spell his own name? What does this tell you? Come on.
It's just, you know, obviously he spent too much time texting, and with all the shortcuts, he just got confused.
You know what? This is already an odd show. The number here is 800-348-2551. David Tripp is remote, and I say that in a kind way because he's not here. Bob Scott is in the building. It's Stamps and Coins today. If you have a question, give us a shout. 800-348-2551 is our number. We'll get to the calls and the emails in a moment. Swing. There's John Schofield on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551 if you have a stamp and or a coin question for David Tripp at Bob Scott. Let's go to Sheffield, Massachusetts. Rob, you're on.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Pretty good.
Hey,
how are
Rob?
You?
Great, great. Hey, I have a question. I inherited, like, my mom's coin collection, which was not like a formal coin collection. It's just stuff that she had collected over the years.
Yeah.
But I got a bunch of like Eisenhower silver coins that are in uncirculated condition.
Yep.
Yeah, they're still in the little plastic containers and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to figure out what they're worth. And so, you know, I would go on to eBay or I'd go on Etsy or something like that to somebody's storefront, and I would see prices that were like $1,200 or something. But I'm like, okay, is this really what the value is? Or is this just something that somebody's going online and saying, yeah, I want $1,200 for this object?
You hit it in one. For the most part, there's only one variety of the Eisenhower dollar, variety 2, 1972, or whatever it is, that kind of trades in that region, $1,200 and up and something like that. No, these are basically come-on prices for the most part. At the end of the day, you're going to be getting something closer to the neighborhood if they're absolutely mint condition. Retail prices are going to be anywhere from $6 to $20.
Okay.
Sorry to put a little...
The weight of the silver, basically, is what we're talking
about.
Well,
and there's very little. Don't forget, there's not a lot of silver in them. So,
really?
No. The earliest ones were made with some more silver, and then it's because if they were pure silver, like let's say a Morgan dollar or something like that, which is actually only about 75% silver, they'd be worth $25 a piece just in scrap weight.
Right.
Right.
So in this case, no. The answer, silver. These are basically to a certain degree spendable, but dealers will pay anywhere from $3 if they're sort of nice uncirculated, as opposed to super duper uncirculated, and.
These
maybe a really great one might bring $18 or $20,
okay.
Unless, as I say, you have the 1971 S40% silver, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera,
okay.
And that's a proof, and that's going to run you a lot of money.
All right, Rob, thank you very much for the call. Now, silver, where does that stand now? What's the price of silver?
We're hovering around $32 an ounce right
now.
Wow,
okay. And gold, I think I saw, was it $3,000 an ounce or what
is it? It's more than that. It hit $3,400. It's come off in the last couple of days. It's around $3,200. It absolutely boggles the mind.
Well, given the tariff situation and the trade wars and the uncertainty in the economy, if you were a coin collector and you had lots of gold coins, maybe from around the world or South Africa or whatever, would you hold on to those? It seems like this uncertainty is going to go on for a while.
Well, the uncertainty is going on for a while. One of the things that has very specifically, and I have, needless to say, since it's my world, I have looked this up specifically. Bullion appears to have been exempted from tariffs regardless of the country of origin.
Hmm.
So if you're bringing gold into the United States from the UK or from Europe or something like that, it is, from everything I've read, outside the sphere of any tariffs being levied on.
Yeah.
It's unclear as to whether that count, whether silver coins count as bullion. It certainly doesn't count for anything that's made out of copper or bronze.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, right now the numbers are insane. What's really interesting is that common date U.S. gold coins, like a $20 gold piece, which has, you know, 0.95, whatever it is, 98 amount of gold in it. It's nearly an ounce of gold. Because the price of gold has gotten so high and there are enough of these double eagles in the market, there have been central bank holdings which have flooded into the market, there's virtually no premium value, i.e. there's no numismatic value over their scrap weight. And my feeling is that eventually, this is a personal opinion, and please do not take me to the cleaners on this one or come back at me. You still have historic value there, which is not which because of the current excessive price of gold is not being taken into account. And dealers actually will buy them for the scrap value now. There's no premium. There's no premium. So if you wanted to buy a gold coin, why not get something that's dated 1908 or something that's dated 1898? As opposed to one of these modern gold eagles that was made 3 weeks ago.
Right, that I see them on TV every night. The number here is 800-348-2551. David Tripp handles your coin questions. Bob Scott handles the stamps. One of the things on the show prep list provided is a very, well, kind of a rude sign on a Ukrainian stamp. This is something.
Yeah, this actually goes back to 2022, and it's what's known as a war stamp that was issued by the Ukraine Postal Service. And throughout the history of stamps, they have been the epitome of political correctness. Their one stamp colored in a part of China, colored in Taiwan as a part of China, and had to withdraw the whole issue because it caused a... So they went out of their way. Ukraine seems to have thrown the rules away. There was an incident at Snake Island where basically the warship Mokba was asked a bunch of Ukrainian soldiers to surrender.
Yeah.
And they said no in no uncertain terms, with a universal gesture and the expression, go forth and multiply.
Well, yeah, okay, I understand. Yes, well said.
And it's in Cyrillic, so it doesn't offend really anybody that doesn't know
the language.
It's
a great stamp, though.
But it is so popular, and it was made even more popular that when it was issued, if you remember back, there was a Russian warship that was sunk.
Yep.
This stamp was issued 2 days later.
Oh.
The ships were sunk.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they have sold 10 million copies
of it. So as a collector, that means it won't be worth much if there's 10 million of them out there.
Oh, absolutely not. But, you know, there is something about something that breaks the rule. The inverted Jenny is the most famous American stamp, and individual copies have sold for 2 million.
Right.
There are 100 of them.
Right.
So just for spectacle, it'll always have some value.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Get back to the phones in a moment. This email from Shosha. Our family just came across thousands of forever stamps. Is there any value to them?
Yeah, postage value. Forever. They are the most, they're the best stamps to have.
Right.
Because every time the postal rate goes up, it's a hedge against inflation. It's fine. As long as there is a post office, there is a stamp that will work. And if it was, if it's, you know, 70 whatever cents today, once it goes up to a dollar, your stamps are still worth a dollar.
Will it go up to a dollar soon?
Not soon, but I would imagine quite easily by the end of the decade.
So do you think that this is a reasonable, sort of a very safe investment strategy?
What?
You could buy a bunch of these, sell them later?
It's an absolute, it's a guard against inflation.
Yeah, interesting.
But, you know, the thing is, it's paper, so it's subject to don't get it wet, don't get... Although,
right.
You know, the forever self-adhesive stamps will, you know, they'll weather an awful lot. A good investment? No.
So forever stamps as opposed to gold is a hedge against inflation. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I mean, gold has been, realistically, gold at 3,400, it's... Over time, it's been a lousy investment.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Stamps and Coins Today with David Tripp and Bob Scott. And Lawrence is in Columbia County. Hello, Lawrence.
Hello, Lawrence.
How you doing?
Good. Hey, Lawrence.
Hi.
What's up, man?
Well, I'm older than I may sound.
Okay.
I'll be 95. In early June.
Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
Well,
it's a condemnation.
No, no.
It's not a congratulations.
I'm sorry, sir.
In Russian, they say starus neuratus, which means old age is not a pleasant time. Huh. Anyway, the reason I'm calling, back in the 1930s and 40s, you know, Roosevelt was president. He was a big stamp collector.
He was indeed.
So many of the boys, including myself, saved stamps. I got into buying sheets of commemorative at the local post office when they came out. At that time, the government would always give you the date when a new stamp was coming out.
Oh. And still do if you buy.
Well, I stopped buying a few years ago, to say the least.
Okay.
But I have probably more than 100 commemorative sheets in the original Gimbel's New York City store packaging.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Gimbel's Coin and Stamp Department. Famous.
Yeah. Macy's and Gimbel's.
Yep.
Well, Gimbel's was the place. Macy's ran at that time in stamps as a poor second. And as a boy from Brooklyn...
Oh, yes, very much so, very much so.
I was both. I was at both places, and Gimbel's was the preferred
Gimbel's was famous for both coins and stamps.
Ah,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, very much so. Actually, I know a fascinating story about that they were selling... U.S. number ones, which are now today, you know, a couple of $100 stamps, and they were selling them as they were buying them en masse from this dealer at about $100 a throw.
Yeah.
And they sold them for a little while, and then they decided, well, let's just do it as a loss leader. So they offered them at $80 with Ooh. Any other purchase. And all of a sudden, it took off. They just started selling them, and buying more and selling them. Turned out the dealer that was selling to them was going to the store and buying them.
Oh, wow.
And apparently it went on for a couple of years.
Just a cycle. Incredible.
Recycling his same material.
All right, Lawrence, you got... So
what's your question?
What's the best way for me to sell these sheets, which have been untouched since I got them in the post office as a teenager?
Honestly, you might get, if they're still in their original Gimbel's packaging and there's enough markings on it, there might be a little curiosity value. But candidly, even if you're going back to the 1930s, I presume you didn't buy the high values, you didn't buy the Zeppelins, you didn't buy sheets of the $5 presidential series.
I didn't have $5.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Didn't have $5, exactly.
So quite honestly...
You know, you're talking depression.
Yeah.
Which is why they are valuable today. The honest truth is they're not worth their face value. They are not
really?
Worth... They really... I'm sorry to say, but...
All these sheets...
They're mostly 3 cent, 2 cent, 3 cent stamps, 1 cent, 2 cent, 3 cent stamps, with the odd 5 cent in there.
Mostly three, I would say. They're commemoratives.
If they come, you've really got to go before the 1920s to get any premium on that. Quite honestly, They're worth about half what you pay for.
Oh, boy, I'm sorry, Lawrence.
I'm very, very sorry to say.
Thank you for the call, though. 800-348-2551 is our number. Stamps and Coins today with David Tripp and Bob Scott. There you go. If you've been waiting for Bob Scott to rain on someone's parade, it's happened. It always happens on this show. David,
a spring shower.
He has a kind of a devilish gleam in his eye when he does that.
oh, no. I feel for the little boy that was going to the post office in the 1930s and thinking that because if he was our age going back 30 years and we were having that conversation, we'd be adding zeros to everything.
So bad. Well, I guess, you know.
Well, and the horrible thing is that if you had bought, you know, a roll of pennies for 50 cents in 1933 or 34, they would be worth, you know, 50 cents would today be worth $500 or $600.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Brian from Post and Kill writes in at voxpop@wamc.org. I have an older U.S. dollar bill, 1930s, I believe, with Hawaii stamped across the back. Hmm. Any value?
Yes, Hawaiian. Is it a $1? Did you say?
He says dollar bill. Yeah, so I assume
a $1 Hawaii. Yeah, they do have. They are of definite better interest. They've got Hawaii in big letters across the back. They were emergency notes from 1935, and if they're in terrific condition, they can bring $3,000 or $4,000. If they are in worn condition, as we are trained on this show to believe and know, it could be $50 to $100.
Okay.
But you can still get mint condition ones in pretty nice condition for not a lot of money. But there is a premium.
Okay.
Definitely.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Stamps and Coins with Bob Scott and David Tripp. Mary wrote in and she broke a rule and sent a picture, but that's okay. Mary in Forestburg sent a picture with some stamps. There's a 1 cent Andrew Jackson. These look apparently, some are obviously marked, some are not. Olympic 1948 Games.
London.
These are English stamps. I see an FDR 6 cent, which looks fairly recent. A 3 cent George Washington in kind of an olive green. And some, I don't know the denomination on the stamps on the top. Here, you take a look, Bob. Bob, go sit in front of a microphone.
I better sit in front of the microphone.
Otherwise, I'll get you a telegraph key.
We have some George VI stamps, which is fabulous. Looking left like we like him. And the only one from the 19th century which could conceivably have some value is a 3 cent George Washington banknote issue.
Aha.
It's only perforated on three sides, which I'd love to say is good, but is in fact the opposite.
What happened?
It means it was either they cut the perforations off or it was the side of the sheet where it had just been cut off.
Understood.
No, that is nearest round receptacle. And that I say with glee.
Okay. All right. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's Bob Scott and it's David Tripp and it's you. And we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you, Stamps and Coins, the stamps handled by Bob Scott, David Tripp, who is not in the studio today, but sounding good. The fidelity is good. He'll handle the coins, and, well, Pope Francis lying in his zinc-lined coffin now in state.
Exactly.
About to make some stamp news.
He is about to make stamp news, as has happened with every changeover of Pope. Since the Vatican started issuing stamps in 1929. And this means that as soon as next week, a stamp will be issued.
Wow.
And it's a sede vacante, the empty seat, interregnum stamp.
Wow.
And it is issued in Vatican City, and it is only valid for use until the new Pope.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yep.
Is installed. And,
go ahead, David.
And I might add that, needless to say, stamps have only been for the last 100 years, but of course we have sede vacante coins as well, which go back to the 15th century.
Amazing.
So this, the same sort of thing, and they are extremely collectible, and they exist in gold and silver, and are it's a fascinating thing because, of course, you know, in some cases it made good sense because it way back when it at one point I think it took over 2 years between popes, nobody could come to an agreement
right.
on it. But usually these days it seems to be what, Bob, about 2 to 3 weeks between. The conclaves are much shorter these days. They seem to come up
this
with an answer
quickly. This one might be
quickly.
A while.
Well, the last yep. one was quick, obviously, because they actually knew it was happening, because when somebody resigns, you do get a little bit of lead time.
Right. You have to give 2 weeks' notice.
But if you think back, for those that are old enough, to 1978, we had a pope installed in August, and he died in September.
Oh, yes.
So they went from one sede vacante to 5 weeks later going into another one. And they issued, in stamps at least, they issued a stamp for the first period. 5 weeks later, they issued another stamp.
Amazing. Yeah. And the notes here that you sent, Francis and Benedict had stamps within 50 days of their elections.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a common amount of time?
For some reason, they like to get it going. I mean, the Vatican is like any other stamp-issuing authority. The more they can sell, the better. You may only be able to use your sede vacante stamps up until the new installation, but you can still buy them and just hold them. They're just no good for postage.
Yeah.
But so they have... And if you go to the... because I have actually checked it. If you go to the Vatican website, there is a special stamp shop. And you can buy them.
Oh, yes, you can. And you can, of course, you can order them online, but you can only mail them at the Vatican.
Will there be tariffs on them if you order them from here?
Well,
I wonder
that,
if there
that remains
we
to
have
be
to
seen.
Check on that one.
Ken writes in, I have a mint condition U.S. $1 bill that has the front of the bill lightly restruck on the back of the bill over the usual back design of that series. There's a lot of... I don't know exactly what I just
offsetting.
Read. Okay.
It's called offsetting, isn't it, Bob? Basically,
depends which way
the
round it
come
is.
Through, the ink must have been wet, and it just sat on it.
And that's a problem?
Well, if it transfers...
It's not what you would call, and Bob is good with paper better than I, but it is not a major error, which would, you know, like... one side would be a $1 note, and the other side would be a $10 note. You'd have an $11 note, and that would bring a lot of money.
Yeah,
in this case, it's curiosity value. If it's a really good image, Bob, do you think you'd get double face value?
Oh, I think if it's a really good image, I think you'd probably get 10 times.
Wow.
There we go.
But if it's just a minor ghost, then depends how high... Depends how much you have to squint to see it. So if you could pass that out, go from a scale of 1 to 10.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins today with Bob Scott and David Tripp. Nate is in Savoy. You're on. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a couple questions. Hi. Could you tell me when the Ben Franklin 1 cent stamp was first issued? And also, I have a postcard with a green 1 cent Ben Franklin stamp on it. And I'm trying to figure out if it's post-dated January 17th, 1910. So does that give it provenance? And does that make the stamp
it
worth
means
more because I can prove when it was bought?
The thing is, we were talking about a little bit earlier about William Shakespeare being the first to actually make it onto stamps, coins, and banknotes as a non-leader royal. Of course, the question is sort of moot with the US because the answer is Ben Franklin, and he was basically on everything as soon as it started and has remained so. He's second only in popularity to... in terms of images, George Washington.
Yeah.
But in terms of numbers for stamps, coins, and banknotes, the winner is Abraham Lincoln, because, of course, he's on the penny.
Right. Yeah.
So you say 1908.
1910. January 17th, 1910 is the postmark on the postcard I have.
Right. This is part of a Washington Franklin series. It's a 3 cent green.
Yep. Well, it's 1 cent.
10 cent. Oh, I mean, a one cent green stamp.
1 cent
green
stamp.
And I believe it has 13 perforations on top and 14 on the side, I think.
Is he in three-quarter portrait looking right?
Can't remember, can you?
I have it on me.
Oh, okay.
Give me 2 seconds. I have it right here.
Oh,
it is a side profile.
How fabulous.
Hang on a second.
A 1 cent green Franklin is a bit like saying a $1 green
dollar bill.
Yeah.
Greenback.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. It's a side view, and he's facing left.
And he's facing left. Okay.
Yes.
Right. So it is... Okay, it's a 1 cent green. Now, I could go into an hour-long diatribe because it's part of a set known as the Washington Franklin set.
Yeah.
And it comes with about 4 different perforations, 2 different printing types. It comes imperf horizontally, imperf vertically, and it was the most popularly produced stamp.
Okay.
It was produced in the billions, and so it's probably better that I give you the odds. It's 99.9% sure if it's used that it's probably worth less than a penny.
Okay.
And it's about a 0.0001 chance that it could be worth $50,000.
Oh, boy.
But they do go between one and the other.
Yeah, I found them for $33,000, $10,000. Like, the internet is very confusing.
Yes.
that's absolutely right. But usually anybody that knows their way around stamps will be able to tell you the printing type. They'll be able to put a gauge on it and tell you exactly what its perforation is, and they will be able to tell you that it is one of the common types.
Okay.
And it's almost certain.
All right.
Is it a very yellow green?
It's kind of like an evergreen.
There you go. Well, that takes one of the valuable ones out of the equation. Green.
All right. So now it's 0.0000000001.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Nate. Good luck, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. This email from Jay. I inherited an extensive coin collection from my grandfather. He primarily collected uncirculated silver dollar coins from the 1800s, but also a few international gold coins. I eventually want to sell them. How do I ensure I get, in all caps, top dollar for these coins? I missed
top dollar. Well, obviously, looking blind, if they are gold coins, if they were contemporary 20th century gold coins when he was buying them, for the most part, it will be before 1933 because that was a cutoff date. Right. Virtually internationally, but they will have some value because, as we just discussed, gold is hovering above $3,000.
Yes.
In order to get top dollar, and if they are all uncirculated and truly uncirculated, my suggestion would be to get in touch with one of the major auction houses around the country who have large websites, and they can cater to anything from a small collection to a large collection. As I say, this $1,794 dollar came to the auction house from a small estate, and boom.
Yeah, there you go.
They had a very happy consigner.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Bob Scott and David Tripp are here. Amy is in Old Chatham. Amy, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have thanks for taking my call. I have International Junior Postage Stamp album from 1928, and it's a huge, pretty big book. It's in poor condition, but it has a lot of stamps from the late 1800s to up until 1928, I would assume, from countries all over the world. And I was just wondering if there's anyone that take an interest in something like this, or if any of these stamps could possibly be worth anything. Some of the countries don't longer exist.
All right, I hope you're sitting down, Amy, because Bob Scott is going to make your day, right?
Right, exactly. The thing you have to remember with the junior volume is it has, do the bad news first.
Okay.
It doesn't have spaces for the valuable stamp. The whole idea is if you had your album, the idea is you wanted to be able to fill it. And they realized very early on, just giving people albums with spaces for every single stamp was a little bit silly when, for example, for British Guiana, you know, number 9 or number 7, depending on which country you're in, there's only one, so there would only be one full album. So they created junior volumes, which were basically the affordable stamps that you could get, so you could actually have a reasonable chance of filling the volume. Now, so that means that, okay, the really big ticket items you probably haven't got, but whomever was collecting at the time, so they didn't necessarily have to follow the rules. If they had a slightly better stamp, especially in 1928, there is a chance it could be there.
Ah.
There is also certain countries that had no real stamp pedigree at that point, and in the last 100 years, it has emerged that there are better stamps, so there is a chance. The best, I'm assuming, they are almost all used. Would that be right?
Well, as I flip through the pages, I mean, I would say it's less than a third filled, or maybe even less than a quarter filled. But there are a lot that are they're literally stuck into the pages, and they don't look used.
Okay, that's the other thing. When you're given your first album, sometimes you get given a mint set. Now, if you stuck them into the album, well, you've kind of lost a lot of the value anyway, because it's not the brightest thing to do. The best thing to do, just from a curiosity point of view, is go and have a look. Your local library and the internet will take you to various places. We will give you an idea. I don't know whether we have any local dealers in Old Chatham anymore.
I don't know, but what's the book you have? Maybe Amy would like that.
What you would, the actual book you would need is something called a Scott volume, and most libraries should have a Scott catalogue. And they have a particularly good catalogue, which is just list the stamps from 1840 to 1940, which will encompass most of your stamps. But the thing is, if it's a 1928 volume and it was given in 1928, it will probably go beyond 1928. Because obviously anything new they put in is going to be after the album date.
Mm-hmm.
These are all like, there's like spots in them with the years in them, you know, and the individual pictures of the stamps that are supposed to go in, and they're all in the right, they look like they're all in the right spaces, but most of them I think are either 28 or earlier. There isn't a lot of old ones added in here.
One, I'll tell you what we can do. David will give our contact information afterwards.
Well, you might as well do it now, David.
Sure. Well, David can do it now. It is very simple. Coin and Stamp Guys, all spelled out, at BERK.com.
Okay. Now, and these guys are not looking for your business. They're just going to help you out a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah, neither Bob nor I are dealers. We do not buy nor do we sell coins or stamps.
Absolutely right.
Yes, and this belonged to my grandfather. That's why I'm pretty sure it was his personal.
Okay.
It wasn't, it was definitely...
All right.
Take a couple of photographs of if you've got China, if you've got any Far Eastern states and the U.S., you can send us a couple of pictures and we'll let you know whether it's just a schoolboy collection or not.
Amy, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Roger in Stamford, Connecticut. Roger, you're on with Bob Scott and David Tripp.
Hi. Good afternoon, guys.
Hi, Roger.
I have a 25-cent wooden nickel from 1932.
A wooden nickel?
I think it's issued by a bank.
That's entirely possible. They use them as advertising, marketing. And there are wooden nickel collectors and societies for collecting wooden nickels, but their values are generally pretty minimal in the real world. And most of them will be, without specifics, it's hard to tell, but for the most part, a wooden nickel is a wooden nickel is a wooden nickel, and most of them will be under $100 a piece. Well under.
That's okay. Pretty good for a nickel.
That's what I'm going to say. $100 for a wooden nickel? Yeah. That's all right.
Well, you know, as I say, as Bob would tell you, for any specific collectible, there are aficionados, and they will pay to get something they don't have.
Right.
And you will find things that bring silly, amazing prices that you would never expect, but it's only in a very specialist area.
Yeah, and if there are two of them.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Roger, thank you very much. That's interesting. 800-348-2551. Yesterday I did a show, I do a history show 3 or 4 times a year with Kathy Sheehan, who is the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian and also in charge of the Hart Clewitt Museum over in Troy. And she brought in some very cool bus tokens, which I assume go back way, you know, these were from the 50s, but I assume that concept goes back a long way. Are any of those valuable, David?
Yeah, I mean, there are people who collect transportation tokens. That's exactly what it is, because, of course, it's not just subway tokens. I mean, I remember the old 15-cent New York City subway tokens when I was a kid. But don't forget, you had the 4th Avenue Railroad that ran up what was now Park Avenue in New York in the middle of the 19th century, and there are tokens for that. And a token for that, I've seen prices in excess of $10,000.
Amazing.
There was wasn't there an electric light railway somewhere near here that went up to one of the lakes?
They had all kinds of...
There were all sorts of trams and what have you. They all had tokens. They're absolutely... If anything is made in series, especially if it's small and collectible, there is somebody that collects it.
Yeah.
And to add on, there are anything that has to do with railways and any sort of transportation in that regard, particularly railways, there are huge collector societies and there are fanatics out there. Fabulous stuff. I know of a very, very esteemed former curator at a major Ivy League school who passed away recently, and he has a collection of in excess of 20,000 railway memorabilia.
Wow,
tokens.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Sorry, let's grab one more call here before we wrap it. We'll go to Allison in Goshen, Massachusetts. Allison, you're on.
Hi. I'm so glad to be on. It's great to hear this.
Hi, Allison.
I have a block of 4 unused stamps from my father from 1935. It's the Charter Oak Tree, and 3-cent stamps, and it's in perfect shape.
3-cent stamps.
Assuming there's
Hello?
4, that's...
Yeah.
Assuming there are 4... It actually has a catalog value of $1.50.
Really?
Yeah, and a realistic value of about, well, we were talking, it's something you could buy with your wooden nickel.
Oh boy!
I mean, just quite honestly, if you wanted another block, I would happily send you one.
Allison, I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry, but it's a very common issue, but. But it was a gift. It's a family piece. So.
And you know the funny thing is with things like that, frame them, put them in the kitchen.
I mean
they're wonderful. There's wonderful art there, and why not?
Yeah, exactly. Allison,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
the Dark Prince has had to rain on your parade, but he does that every show, and I'm sorry.
I am sorry. But
thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. You know, that's the end of the show. I knew you'd do this if we went long enough. All right, once again, David Tripp. What is your email address if people want to get in contact with you guys?
It is coinandstampguys, all spelled out, at Berk, B-E-R-K, .com.
All right. Bob, Scott, thanks for being here, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
David Tripp, thanks for not being here, buddy.
Thank you so much.
we'll see you soon. Support comes from Camp Hill Village, Copaic, where adults with developmental disabilities and service volunteers have been farming, living, and creating since 1961. Open day, May 31st. CampHillVillage.org. And the Old Mill has reopened as The Mill. in South Egremont. New room, new menu, featuring dinner 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. Reservations for parties of five or more requested. Once again, thanks to David Tripp and Bob Scott for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Andrea Leong, who screened the calls. You see, I didn't even have to write her name down, and I remembered it this time. Tomorrow on the program, it's astronomy. Bob Berman and Dr. Valerie Rapson will be here, and we will contemplate the heavens together. We'll see you, too.